Hi, friends. My name is Caitlin Eastler, and this is the Happy at Work podcast, nurturing business success through workplace connection and well-being. Join me on this journey as we applaud the forward-thinking people leaders who deeply understand the value and connection between investing in purposeful, people-first cultures and attaining positive business outcomes. By day, I'm the founder and CEO of Happily and mom to Hannah, which is the best job ever. And I've recently taken on the added role of head of culture and software, talent advisory at DSG. Together, we collaborate with people leaders nationwide who are doing amazing things in the new world of work. Happy at Work gives us an opportunity and the extreme pleasure of highlighting this important work, the work of those that are deeply committed to their roles as innovators, passionate leaders, and guardians in creating and protecting exceptional cultures. From championing learning and development to prioritizing employee mental and physical health, social impact, and overall workplace well-being, these leaders make a difference. Stay tuned to hear the lessons learned from these exceptional humans. Thank you for joining us on this journey. We are so glad you're here. Hi, friends. I'm joined today by Angela Cheng Cimini, who is sitting in this amazing seat as leading people and HR with Harvard Business Publishing. I had the pleasure of hearing Angela talk on another podcast and just thought we need to be friends. I think our shared passion for creating great cultures and just bringing people together really made me want to meet this amazing human. So Angela, I would love for you to share with our audience a little bit about what this role is that you play, how you ended up in this seat, and why you're so passionate about it.
So I've been at this for 30 years, which is kind of crazy, but it is definitely my calling. Although the beginnings of it didn't feel like that. My dad actually discovered this major for me. And so I just kind of fell into it. And then internship and the course study, you know, really turned something on for me that said, this is what I want to be doing. And I have not been disappointed, even though some moments have been really difficult, right? When you take an organization through a reorg or a restructure where you have to say goodbye to people under whatever circumstance, even despite those really horribly sad moments, overall, I find this career choice incredibly gratifying. And so I find myself, as you say, in this seat leading HR for one of, you know, what I think is one of the best brands on earth. So Harvard Business Publishing puts out Harvard Business Review. We're also responsible for distributing most of the case studies that college students will touch somewhere or graduate students will touch. We own about 50% of that market. And then we have a third arm of the business that's professional services, where we work with the Global 2000 to help co-create their leadership development programs. And it's all grounded in our own HBR research. So essentially everything that we do in our business is about the lifelong learner. And it's about how do you really amplify your organization so that you can drive performance and productivity. So I have to find a way to translate that into our HR programs and our people processes and the way in which our values show up to support all that. And so it is, as I said, incredibly satisfying work because I'm surrounded by people who intuitively do that for their work and then spiritually bring that every day. So it's just a great conversion of all the things that make it magical.
Thank you for sharing. And I think sitting in your seat, you have to have so much heart, right, to do what you do. And so I know that I'm sure your teammates feel so lucky to have you in that seat.
Very kind of you to say.
Thank you for the work you do.
Thank you.
We were talking a little bit offline about kind of this world of, you know, post-pandemic, AI, war for talent, climate change, social action, how your role has just evolved and changed so much. And I think as you think about creating a culture that's good for people and that's good for the business, how do you focus your efforts in a moment where you can't be everything to everybody, right? So you've got to be really thoughtful around how you spend your time and energy to help the business meet the goals and to take great care of the people. And so offline, we talked about, you know, culturally, you know, sometimes culture people think of as like, are we volunteering together? Where are we having a social, all those things. But I love how you started with culture really around thinking about career path, envisioning the future, how people will learn and grow, and how the training investment that you guys have made will play into all of that. So if you don't mind, I think our audience will love hearing about it.
So there's so much there. So I think to start sort of where you began, which is, I think every day I'm waking up and it's a different day. Because at any given moment, you have to make a choice to decide how are you going to spend those energies. Now, clearly, we have corporate goals, we have strategic priorities that we have then translated in our function so that the work that we do clearly ladders up, right? We don't want to be chasing our own agenda when it has nothing to do with what's important to the organization at large. So that's always our North Star, is what we're doing advance the work of the larger organization. And because we are who we are nonprofits, so or mission-based, what we want to do is unlock the leader in everyone. And so we have to be constantly thinking about how does the work that we do advance that mission. So sometimes—
You said unlock the leader, is that what you
unlock
said?
Unlock the leader in everyone, right? And so it's irrespective of where you are in your career journey, what discipline, what function, whether you're in the C-suite or you're just coming out of college and you're landing your first job. There is a leader in everybody. And how does it show up at that point in time? We want to be the resource for you when you have a question. We want to be where you do your research, where you read the article, or where you go get some of your learning and development with your organization. So at any given point, I might be working on an employer relations issue. I might be designing a workshop. I might be working with the executive team to talk about our position on a recent SCOTUS decision. So the variety of work is massive. And as we said offline, Caitlin, it didn't used to be such a big aperture. There was a time when there were things that you talked about at work and there were things that you reserved for outside of work. And increasingly, those worlds are colliding. Organizations, consumers, clients, candidates want to know your position on ESG. They want to know how you're advancing diversity. They want to know whether or not they can have access to benefits if they can't get them in the state where they live. Right. So there are all these things that require, as you say, energy. And so I'm not sure that it's necessarily, it is about good energy management, but it is in some ways trying to say yes to all those things because we have so many constituents with so many diverse interests, things that matter to them, that I think part of what makes a culture strong is having people feel like their needs are being heard and their needs are being met. Now, clearly, there are some bounds to that, but to the degree that an organization can satisfy those needs, that makes the culture really strong because people feel special and they feel seen.
Yeah. And you're one person, right? And assume you have a nice team.
A great team.
But
a great team.
Also, people, like these things, some of these things need to be employee-led, right? And giving people resources to participate so that it's not all on you as well, I bet.
Yeah. So we have stood up employee resource groups, and that's certainly a safe space for people to find community and allyship. But by and large, most of these things still need to come from the center. They still need to come from the organization. And so I'm always encouraging employees to come forward and share with me and my team what they're feeling, what they're experiencing on the front line, because it informs our decisions to make sure that what we're doing is actually making a difference for them, to make sure that it is actually helping the business, to make sure that we're using our resources in the best way possible, because there could be a million things we're working on. And so we're choosing instead to work on 750,000. Are those the right 750,000?
Right. That's fantastic. And I think we might have to do a whole session on how you handle communications around that and prioritization, but I won't take us there yet. But in terms of this investment that you had mentioned that you're making, because you want to make sure that it's a career destination for people and they can grow and evolve, what's involved there and like what are you doing to make that program, make it possible?
So full credit to the organizational effectiveness team. Shout out to my partner, Marianne Amato, who leads that team. So after the corporate strategy session, she embarked on sort of workforce analysis to understand what were the skills that we needed to be successful to achieve the goals that we've set out for ourselves. And she waded through mountains of data, both internal and external, to kind of understand what was trending outside of us, but also what was evolving inside to understand what were the skills we needed to go after. And she came up with some things that aren't going to be surprising, but it's driving business acumen. It's developing data and digital intelligence. It's about increasing communications. So those are some of the areas that we're really going to invest at the broadest scale, right? That we want everyone in the organization to have an experience that advances one of those skills, if not all three. Then we're going to work at the unit, the business unit level, because there are specific needs for the IT team. There are specific needs, say, for the sales team. We're going to cater to those. And then individually, we're also going to set aside money so that people can go pursue a course, they can go get a certification, we have tuition reimbursement. And so we're going to fund at the individual level efforts that people think they need so they can be successful on the job. So we're taking $500,000 and being really intentional in how we spend that. And my aim is to spend every single penny so that next year I can go to my CFO and say, I need more than $500,000 because it wasn't enough last year.
Right. And because here's how it works.
That's right.
And here's how we track the progress and the outcomes. And this is how it impacted the business. And I think I say that and I'd love your perspective on it. But I think that sometimes where the miss is in terms of that partnership, as you think about HR and people leadership with the business is, okay, show me the path to how this connects and show me how taking great care of people is great business, because sometimes it's not always as clear, but it's such an important bridge to build.
So I think, you know, we fundamentally get that right because it's what we write, it's what we sell, it's what we teach. So I am very grateful that that's at least not a hill that I have to climb. I think people fundamentally understand that good leaders beget great cultures, which begets great corporate performance, organizational performance. So that's not, you know, I don't have to connect those dots. People are connecting them for me and saying, go faster. So I have a great environment in which to play.
So for people that aren't as fortunate as you to live in that environment, do you have any suggestions for how they can communicate that value and anything there?
Absolutely. So I think I will share sort of my 90-day experience when I first joined Harvard Business Publishing, which was, so we were already in the throes of the pandemic, so we were already remote. And we were also at the war for talent. So I wanted to understand why people were choosing to leave us at the same time that I was choosing to join. So I decided to sit in on every exit interview. And out of that exit interview, I could see the trends around why people were choosing to leave. And the primary reason by far was career development. People couldn't envision themselves in the role beyond the one they occupy today. They couldn't see a path forward.
Yeah.
And so having identified that problem, I immediately went about, here are a number of solutions. This is the one that I think is the best. And I brought that to the executive team and they said, go. Like, yes, we are losing good people. That is a problem to be solved that has direct impact on our ability to perform as an organization. And they gave me carte blanche to go forward. So anytime that you are meeting resistance, you have to understand and articulate the problem you're trying to solve and make sure that it ties into the key interests of your constituents and stakeholders. So in my case, those were the members of the executive team. And once I was able to articulate for them why I knew this was a problem that needed to be solved and the path forward, it was really easy to get them on board. So that should be the approach for anybody. Anybody on my team who says, Angela, hey, I want to do this. I'm going to ask them all the questions. Why? How? What problem does it solve? And then how quickly can you go do it?
Why? How? What problem does it solve?
And how quickly?
And how quickly can you do it?
How quickly can you do it, right? I mean, even if it's with your child or your spouse, right? Like, hey, I'm sensing that you don't think I'm cleaning the house often enough. Like, okay, if I do it twice a week, what's the problem I'm trying to solve? What resources can I have at my disposal to do that? And then how quickly should I be getting it done? I mean, it's sort of just a good lifestyle.
Yeah, I love it. This is a fantastic formula. And I think sometimes the things that sound the simplest are actually the hardest to do, right? And so I think this is like really actionable takeaway that people will be able to use. So thank you for that. I love it. Is there anything else you wanted to share relative to the work you guys are doing in terms of training and upskilling, or shall we jump into culture, broader culture?
Yeah, let's talk about culture, Caitlin. Let's get at it.
So in terms of, you know, all the conversation around remote work, hybrid, you know, back to office, all the things, how are you approaching that internally? What are you finding is working? Any tips for people as they're thinking about everything from communications to anything in between that will make that process better for their team?
Well, I think the first thing to recognize, and this will probably already be obvious to your listeners, is that one size does not fit all. And I am definitely sensing that there is momentum increasingly to bring people back to the office. I have listened to many of my colleagues, other chief HR officers who are bringing their folks back, some as often as 5 days a week. And some of that is really situational, right? They're in retail, for example. So they've got people in store. So how do you ask your retail employees to be in the store when the corporate staff aren't around to support? or they work for a venue. So it's a theater. How do you ask your staff not to be in the theater when that's where everything happens? So some of it is situational, but other times it is, you know, just the CEO has a perspective on how the world works and they think they're losing something and it shows up in their numbers. People are actually being less productive. So having a mandate to bring people back into the office makes sense. Where I get most concerned is where there's a mandate, but it's not tied to why, what problem are you solving? And, you know, what's right. the approach? We're not experiencing that right now. We don't believe that any of the business headwinds we're facing have anything to do with where people are working. But it's something that obviously I'm watching for, because if there's anything holding us back from performing, we've got to take a look at it. But that's not on my radar. So I think it's an interesting thing to watch what other organizations are doing from the outside. And I think that organizations who don't recognize that a blanket mandate with no good reason is not good policy, they're going to find out the hard way. And I think there are times when a mandate makes total sense, but I think you just need to be really thoughtful about, again, the problem you're trying to solve.
I think these are very, very wise words. One size does not fit all is really fantastic and so on point. When you think about culture and bringing people together and making sure that they can collaborate and that they're not having water cooler moments in the same way, how are you solving for that? Is there anything that you guys are doing that you're seeing is working really well? Is there anything you see in the market that you respect that you think is working well?
Well, I think we have to accept that the water cooler moments are mostly gone in an environment where everybody is remote, and that even in hybrid, right, where people choose to come in as it's most productive for them, you're not always going to be in the office on the same day that someone else is who you need to talk to.
Right.
So what we've been falling back on is how do we make sure that people have the right kind and the right number of relationships so that when they do need to connect with someone, they know who to go to get that advice or to get that support or just to feel like they're not alone. So we have built out a really robust onboarding program, a new hire orientation. Some say it's a little too jam-packed, but I would much rather there be too much activity than not enough. Because in those formative weeks, right, we really make sure that people develop relationships, they broaden their network, because once they get sucked into their day-to-day job, their sphere of influence is most likely going to be their manager and their teammates. So as early as possible, we want them to be reaching out in deeply across the organization so they can have other networks to pull on. And then, yes, we're thinking about how do we lure people into the office? Is there a speaker? Is there free lunch? Is there, you know, a social gathering? We also don't want to make people come in for happy hour, right? Because that's also not a good idea. But I would say that we're still working on that. But I'm really trying to change the vocabulary so that it's best of both. It's neither remote. It's not hybrid. It's work where you can be most productive. If you need heads down quiet time and you can get that in the office, then come in. If you can get that at home, then stay home. If you just want to be surrounded by people, well, then know on every Wednesday we have free lunch. That's your best bet.
Absolutely.
And if it's better for your commute, you come in at 10 a.m. Or if it's better for your commute that you come in at 6, we let you decide. And so long as you're tending to your clients and you're getting your work done and you're letting us know that you're alive and kicking, we're pretty happy with how that's working.
I think that's a really good point, right? I think tend to clients and getting your work done needs to be tied even more into this conversation. So if we want flexibility, yes, we have flexibility when we are tending to clients and getting work done, right? We don't have flexibility when, you know, you're just not getting your work done. Like, it's not how businesses run.
Right. You can't set your hours to work at 5 p.m. to midnight when you're on the East Coast and your clients work 9 to 5, right? So,
right.
But those aren't the kind of conversations we've been needing to have. And I think people really innately understand their commitments and their obligations, which is why I think what we're doing right now, this best of both, is working well for us.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously have a very evolved culture, right? And an incredible group of people that are grateful for the culture and for what it is. And they're high performers. So that certainly improves the landscape of how you are able to tackle these challenges.
So to that point, Caitlin, I'd like to share a really important piece of work that we did in the last 12 months, which was we did a new set of corporate values. And we did it through a grassroots committee that we called Team Polaris, right? Because we wanted them to establish the North Star. And we took all these inputs and we distilled them down to 3 bits that have been thoroughly embedded in our culture and are really organically invoked. It's been so amazing to see that they have evolved so far beyond words on a placard. People just intuitively get them. So it's do what's right, do what's hard, and do it with excellence. And then underneath each of those, there are operating principles, things like disagreeing with respect, act like an owner, be a champion for others. But we constantly talk about doing what's right, and that's first in the sequence. It's always about doing what's right, and then doing what's hard, not shirking from the things that are complicated or emotionally difficult. And then, of course, when you do it, show up and do it with excellence, because we have a certain commitment to the brand of Harvard. It stands for excellence, and so we can never forget that quality is a huge part of who we are. But all the time we're talking about, and that's an example of how someone did what's hard, or that's an example of how we were recognized for doing it with excellence. And it's just been so, so unifying for the whole organization to really find those values resonant. And when we talk to new hires, and when we talk to employees, and when we talk to clients, it resonates for them too. It's been one of my most proudest moments is to, you know, have been a part of that work.
And you should absolutely be proud of that. That's fantastic. I mean, those values, like, just like I almost had like goosebumps hearing you talk about them, because it really resonates with me. Like, I think that I can see why that's where you guys landed. And I think one of the biggest potential opportunities for companies is making sure that you're celebrating values in action. And, you know, in my little company, right, what we do on Fridays is we do what's called a happily hug. We do a shout out to people that are living values. And it's really meaningful, because I think being seen matters. And it also is contagious. When you see people doing good, you're like, oh, I want to do more of that too. And it feels good for people to be celebrated and to pause in what can, you know, feel like a long week and, you know, and the days running together to pause and really celebrate. It's just such a game changer. Yeah. And it costs nothing.
That's right. That's right. Recognition is free.
So how are you seeing people recognize values in action?
So one of the things we do is at the end of each year, there's a culminating event. We call them the 1HVP Awards. And so we give them for teams. And just last year, for the first time, we started to do it for individuals, because there was a clamor, because there are so many examples of people who are actually the trifecta of those things. And so we decided to also give an award. And this last year, we had three people to recognize who embody doing what's right, doing what's hard, and doing it with excellence. And it's just such a feel-good moment for the whole organization. And people stand up and applause. And for those who are dialing in, to see the hearts and the claps float up, the emojis, right, float up the screen, it's a goosebump-worthy moment. And so we talk about, we share those stories, right, that help build the culture.
I love it. And one of the things, this may seem like a really simple question, but when you think about how is this operationalized? Are people sending an email to an inbox that's like where you're collecting these nominations, or like how is that working?
So for those awards in particular, yes, there's a nomination period, but throughout the year, anybody at any time can award someone a spotlight award. And it's as small as $100 and it's as significant as $10,000, depending on the impact and scale of their work. And then we have one division that gives out superhero stickers for just showing up as a superhero. And I'm really proud to say I've got two of them on my laptop. And so it just,
So
it's just super motivating. It just kind of shows up on your desk and someone has reached out for you to thank you and acknowledging you for something that you did for them. And so we're trying to do more of those moments. I mean, like most organizations, we talk more about our failures because we're trying to do the postmortem, and we really should get a lot better at celebrating the wins and successes, because we have a lot of them, but we've just become so accustomed to that level of quality that, like, we take it as a given that people are just going to do great things every day. And we really should be doing a lot more to acknowledging them.
And these words are just so meaningful to people, right? And then they go home and they share them with their people, right? Whether that's their families or their friends or their dog, right? Like, they are so proud. And it's not a one-time thing, right, where you get that sticker. It really sticks with you.
It's the equivalent of being able to put your report card on the refrigerator. You know, I mean, it's...
Yes.
Who doesn't want to feel valued and appreciated?
You know, we get to work with companies to help them think about how they bring their teams together in healthy ways and how they're looking at their culture. And it's such a joy to be able to be in those conversations. And when we run a workshop, or we advise clients on a strategy of how to bring their team together, or we lead them through a give back exercise, and, you know, you're there and you're doing the work and you see them, people light up and you see that magic, that's one piece of like amazing gratitude, right? You know, for us, or one piece where we get to like feel recognized. But what I've seen recently is so many clients have been so thoughtful after the fact and sent us notes to tell us how it's impacted them.
Wow.
And I just am so grateful for them, right? Because like they don't need to do that. And I think that we all in life can take a moment to just show gratitude, point out good things people are doing.
Kudos to you and your team. I'm sure they were well deserved. But yes, to your point, it takes 30 seconds to drop a note. And the afterburn on that is days, weeks, months. It gives you renewed energy to continue to do good work.
Are you bringing your teams together in person with purpose? Or are you finding that at this point, it makes more sense just to bring people together through Zoom because then everybody can be included? Or what does that look like?
So for me personally, most of my team is local. So I am able to pull them together, but I do have folks who are dialing in. I have someone in Canada. I have a couple of folks in Texas. So it is typically hybrid. I am trying to think about ways in which we can do that as an organization. It's a little challenging, right? Because the logistics of pulling that together. But typically we just leave the teams to figure out what's best, because some of them are just so distributed that pulling them physically together just really isn't workable. But we are hoping that teams are being intentional about how they spend their time together.
I want to double tap on that, if you don't mind. I was talking with a good friend who's the CEO of executive search advisory firm, and we were talking a lot about how as the company has grown, like people still look to her to be the beacon of like how things go culturally. And we were talking about how this need to enable leaders to be responsible for their teams, right? And really understand that like that's a leadership responsibility to really own how you bring your team together, how you celebrate birthdays and things like that. Do you think that's something that your culture just has known how to do, or did you have to teach people how to do that?
I would say, no, it's not something our culture instinctively know how to do. And did we have to teach people? It's probably more on the job learning, right? Because the switch to remote was overnight. But I think what you're talking about is finding multipliers. And I do think that senior leadership, it has to come from the top, right? We set the tone for how the organization feels. And if that is zero, then the multipliers are always going to be zero, right? It's not going to cascade. So your leadership team, your CEO, they have to be 100%, because, you know, naturally, as things go through the organization, you tend to lose a few percentage points, right? Because the message gets a little bit less clear, a little bit fuzzier. So you need to start out as gangbusters as possible so that by the time it reaches your frontline employee, it's at least still 70% of the whole where you started. And so we're always on the lookout for people who can amplify our message, who can help us carry the water, because it can't be on the backs of just the CEO. It can't be just on the backs of the 10 of us on XCOM. It can't even be just on the backs of the 30 people who report to our executive committee, right? And so certainly since the pandemic, that has been harder, but it has also become so much clearer to us why that's important. And it has also made clear that our middle managers carry so much of that burden for us because they are player and coach, right? So they have their own plate of things to do while they have to motivate and inspire the people who are doing that work. And they have to make sure that the work is tied to the strategy, and they have to make sure that people's mental health is taken care of. And they have to make sure that they're there to provide support, but also to provide direction and to hold people accountable. So that's where I sort of think that's where the most work is happening, is in the middle of the company, because they're straddling both ends, which is why, again, the clarity and the leadership from the top has just to be so present, because the middle managers need that most.
And will you go tactical with me on that? So where would you suggest somebody start if they were like, okay, we feel like we're missing the moments that matter, that tie people together culturally. We're going to roll out a program where you, the CEO and exec team, is going to talk through what that's going to look like. And then that goes into the layers. Like, what would you recommend that look like?
So the first time ever we embarked on a corporate strategy setting process, believe it or not, we didn't used to do that. Each of the business units was sort of doing their own thing. And this was the first time we really intentionally started at the tippy top of the organization. And to make sure that that work was relevant and resonant, we engaged what we sort of called the plus one group. So it was sort of two levels down from the executive committee. So it was VPs and senior directors, and we brought about a group of 50 of them together in person to help us workshop what the goals were going to be for the next fiscal year. Clearly, the executive team had done baseline work to start, because it wasn't a complete blank sheet of paper when we brought this plus one group together. But then they were able to influence and inform and shape that work so that when we went out to the broader organization, we had a group of about 60 people who could carry the message. And that was an example of where we found multipliers.
Can I double tap one further? And I promise I'll stop making you be a strategy coach
for
us. So let's just talk about it relative to gathering with teams, right? So whether that's in person or remotely, what direction have people gotten in your organization?
So, I mean, I think some of it is just back to basics, right? Are you having your one-on-ones? Are you having regular team meetings? Are those meetings run well? Do you have an agenda? Are you only inviting the people who really need to be in the room? Are you making good use of the time? Are you making sure that you're inclusive? Is everyone getting airtime, right? It's even just sort of those fundamentals can really drive a sense of whether or not people feel like they belong and they can contribute and they're having impact. It doesn't have to be this big dog and pony show, but even if just within your own team, there's structure, there's enough flexibility, there's enough direction so that when you're on your own, you know what you're supposed to be working on. That I think is a formula and recipe for a really high-performing organization.
I love it. Well, I cannot wait to see you in person and to share more time. I know that anybody that is listening to this is going to have gotten so much value out of your wisdom and just your humble approach to everything you do. It's just so inspiring.
Well, thank you, Caitlin. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.